Welcome to Aware. We are dedicated to communicating information that inspires your positive growth and change. Are you interested in a peaceful planet? Are you interested in optimal health? Are you living with purpose? Are you enjoying your life? We realize each person can make a difference, and our mission is to empower your awareness. The choices that you make in every moment shape your life, and we encourage you to realize that you have your own answers and to always listen to your own truth. We invite you to stay aware. Hello and welcome to the Aware Show. I am so excited to be with you today. I just get this wonderful opportunity to speak with transformational leaders and communicate messages that inspire massive growth and change in people. And we all do this in the name of entertainment. Imagine that. So thank you so much for joining me today. I deeply appreciate it. By the way, if you would like a free gift, you can go to my website, which is theawareshow.com/gift. And there you will find a wonderful meditation that I recorded. It's a visualization process that takes you through different levels of consciousness, getting you to the optimal state of possibilities. And you can enter into your goal and your dream at that state. And it's a really wonderful way to act as if and create what is possible. So it's my gift to you. Go to theawareshow.com/gift. So another gift that's hugely happening is the incredible celebration of Paramahansa Yogananda. 70 years. It is a 70-year anniversary of his book, Autobiography of a Yogi. And this book is so transformational in nature that it exists as if it was written yesterday. It holds a beautiful, what many people call miraculous energy that forms out of the powerful combination of the words and the energy the words were written in that jumps off of the page and really takes form in the form of miracles, as many people have accounted that have read Autobiography of a Yogi. And it is responsible, Paramahansa Yogananda is responsible for a movement that has transformed the way that we experience spirituality in the West. That event is happening tonight at the Bodhi Tree. Now, the Bodhi Tree, isn't this exciting? I just said the words, the Bodhi Tree. The Bodhi Tree is back. And I'm so excited about this. Do you remember the Bodhi Tree bookstore on Melrose Avenue, that iconic spot that we used to talk about all the time on the Aware Show a couple of years ago, where people would go to seek experiential transformation and listen to incredible authors speak and browse the spiritual aisles of the bookstore and have an incredible experience and meet like-minded people? It was the hub. It was the spot to go. And guess what? It is back. And joining me is Stephen Powers, who is the CEO at Bodhi Tree, to tell us the story of the tree. Welcome, Stephen. Thanks for joining me.
Thank you, Lisa. It's my joy to be here on the Aware Show.
Yes. So tell me about you have quite a story yourself, coming from CEO of Agape Media International and responsible for platform expansion at Thrive Market, one of the first half a dozen people there at Thrive, which has gone on to be fantastic. The Bodhi Tree is your new calling. Tell me about that.
Well, I think most Aware Show listeners know that the Bodhi Tree began 40 years ago in 1970. So I have been involved now for close to 2 years. It seems to me like a natural extension of my lifelong journey. I became aware of my mission in life was to uplift the human spirit with arts and entertainment back in literally four decades ago, and I've been very honored and privileged to be able to work work in that field for all of this time, much of it as a producer of transformational media, as you mentioned, working with Michael Bernard Beckwith, who will be at the event this evening to celebrate Yogananda's autobiography. And I just have always loved co-creating arts, entertainment, it's music, books, film that touches the heart and uplifts the human spirit, as I mentioned. So my journey to the Bodhi Tree was really the result of, first I went there, let's start when I first went to the Bodhi Tree 20 plus years ago. I was one of those people you were mentioned who was drawn there, who found it a place of solace, a place of community, a place of connection. I still remember vividly that I bought my first affirmation card there on my first visit. At the time, I didn't know what an affirmation was, I was like, well, I want to get a little something here, and I picked up a card, and it said spiritual affirmations, and I brought that home, and I still have that, and I actually carry it with me, have it with me today, and it was just filled with, in the early days of this transformational movement and of transformational media, of some very powerful affirmations that I began to use in my own life. So that's where my journey began there, and I have it continued, as you mentioned, through Agape. I got to the Bodhi Tree because when Stan Madsen and Phil Thompson decided that it was time for them, after 40 plus years, to retire and close their original shop on Melrose, a woman from Great Britain, from London, who was herself a seeker and a person who came to the Bodhi Tree from all the way across the ocean to discover, the books and the community that were there, decided that she wanted to commit herself to continuing the Bodhi Tree and to expanding the Bodhi Tree. So she made a deal with Stan and Phil and embarked on this journey. Her name is Jasmine Fayed, and she herself is a wonderful spiritualist and seeker like all of us. So she found me because I was speaking at a conference, and a woman who worked for her, who still works for us at the Bodhi Tree, Caroline Cameron, heard me speak at the Sustainatopia conference, and they thought I might have something to offer. So I felt very blessed and honored that they approached me and asked me to take this role.
Can you tell me a little bit about Stan and Phil and when they created the Bodhi Tree bookstore and why?
Yes, absolutely. Well, they are sort of quintessential children of the 60s. They were aeronautical engineers who worked here in Southern California. They were literally building planes to drop bombs, and I think they're designing them. And I think that they, in their own spiritual path, they realized that was not something they wanted to continue to do, and they loved books. So they made this decision, along with a third person whose name I don't remember, who was involved for a couple years, to leave their jobs as aeronautic engineers, and I'm fond of saying, to choose to make love, not war. And they opened the Bodhi Tree. So they got this little house on Melrose. It began that way and continued for 40 glorious years. They love books. They're still involved with the Bodhi Tree, so they're advising us. They are people whom, I greatly respect. I feel honored to have gotten to know them better since beginning work at the Bodhi Tree. Some other interesting notes about Stan, for example, built most of the cabinets and shelves and all the wood that we know and loved about the Bodhi Tree on Melrose. His hobby is a carpenter. And the first time I met him, I drove up to his house in Laurel Canyon, and I pulled up to his garage, and he was out there, in the garage making something, like a cabinet or something. And he showed me through his house, and he said, "I made all of this." And so people who went there maybe didn't know that was his own hand, putting all that love into the space. But they're great lovers of books, and they had this commitment to books. So I've asked them what they felt was the essence of what made the Bodhi Tree so special, and their answer was, "We listened." And of course, that's good advice for all of us, to understand that by listening to what people want, what people need, you can learn a lot. So they said, "We weren't that knowledgeable. We called it the Bodhi Tree because of our particular interest in Buddhist literature." And the Bodhi Tree, of course, is the tree that Siddhartha sat under to attain enlightenment as the Buddha. But they said, "We expanded it to all these other great wisdom traditions because our customers came in and started telling us about great books, about great spiritual practices, about wisdom traditions, and we learned from them and just continued to add to what the Bodhi Tree was.
Now, the Bodhi Tree closed a couple of years ago, the physical house on Melrose, right?
Correct. Yeah, the original location, which was there for over four decades, closed a few years back on Melrose. At that time was when Jasmine acquired the business, and we have been working ever since on its reincarnation, its rebirth, in an online format. So our first offering is a portal, bodhitree.com, which is now open and available. Anyone can go there and begin to see the bookstore, the metaphysical mercantile, the journal, and all the offerings that are there. So we have bodhitree.com, and then tonight we are taking the next step, which is a physical space. It's at the corner of La Brea Avenue and Melrose, so back on Melrose, and it's called Bodhi Tree Live. It is kind of the rebirth of what was known as the Bodhi Tree Annex, where the authors and teachers often spoke, and that's what we're going to be doing in this space, is having events such as the autobiography of a yogi, Yogananda celebration. So that's our next step in this process, and we definitely envision opening a new flagship retail location also in Los Angeles, but one step at a time.
Okay. I was wondering, for all of those who are used to the touch and texture of an actual book, there is still a store in this location. There's it's upstairs, and there is still a display area and a store in this location. But for those who like browsing aisles of bookshelves and creating community through a store, that's coming, right?
That's coming, yes, exactly.
Right now, though,
this is what is sometimes called a pop-up shop. It'll only be open during during events, but it will be a place for community to connect and gather, and that, of course, is such a key word when you speak of the Bodhi Tree. I will mention right now, I may not have even told you this in advance or any of your producers, but we are having an open house in just a week on December 8th, which is the worldwide celebration of Siddhartha's enlightenment. It's called Bodhi Day. It's in effect a Buddhist Christmas. It's the day historically that he attained enlightenment, and so on Bodhi Day, December 8th, we are going to have an open house from 11 a.m. to 9 p.m. here at Bodhi Tree Live, and everyone is welcome. There will be speakers, there will be readers, there will be oracles, there'll be some tea, there'll be books and other items, and we just love to see you.
And the Bodhi Tree is going to be doing events like this frequently to bring community together. What is the mission of the new format of the Bodhi Tree?
The mission is the same as it's always been. It's to educate, to uplift, to serve awareness, if you're talking about it at a very high level, how can we serve the spiritual community? How can we grow the awakened community? How can we be of service on a global scale to everyone who's interested in further
personal
awakening and awareness.
Yeah, and personal growth. So there's an open house on the 8th, and then tonight there is the wonderful celebration of 70 years of the autobiography of a yogi. Now, I just want to ask you a few more questions about the concept behind the Bodhi Tree. The online portal is live now. It is up now, and people can shop there. They can some of the original content from the speakers from when the Bodhi Tree bookstore was around exists on that site as well, right?
Yes, we have. We'll have seven pillars reflecting the seven pillars of spiritual awakening. I think five or six of those pillars are in place now. So they include, of course, the bookstore, the metaphysical mercantile, our mercantile or our shop, and these are goods, artisanal goods, handmade goods, really lovingly made, that support spiritual practice, that support ceremony and sanctuary, sacred home, sensuality, and those are available in the mercantile. And then there is the journal. Many of you may know, many of your listeners may know, that for more than two decades, the Bodhi Tree published the Bodhi Tree Book Review Journal. So we are bringing back that tradition. We've hired a whole editorial team, so there's original content that is about Awakened Living that we are publishing new articles every month, and there's quite a few of those available now from both authors and other experts in the field. So that's the third pillar, is the journal. Then there is, as you mentioned, the legacy pillar, and the legacy pillar contains all the great content created over the four decades by Stan and Phil and the team at the Bodhi Tree, and it includes more than 500 audio recordings of talks given at the Bodhi Tree on Melrose, which we're now calling Bodhi Talks, and there's many incredible, basically a who's who of metaphysical speakers and authors, Marianne Williamson and Deepak Chopra and Paulo Coelho and Don Miguel Ruiz and Doreen Virtue, and, you know, the list just goes on and on, from the well-known to the more obscure, someone like Leonard Schlain, who many people don't know, but was a very prominent thinker, particularly with respect to women and their awareness. His greatest book, or his best known book, is called The Goddess Versus the Alphabet, and it talks about how the introduction of the alphabet 3,000 years ago favored linear thinking and brought about kind of male dominance for so many millennia. Just wonderful thinkers and ideas and books. These are all in the Bodhi Talks. We've also put online all of the issues that you can now read of the Bodhi Tree Book Review Journal. So they're all there. You can read them. They're like a time capsule to back, you know, back in the day in Los Angeles. And we will be creating new content as well. There's also a radio program that was on for a long time, Conversations Under the Bodhi Tree, and many other bits of content that are there in the legacy pillar. And then there will be a community pillar, which if you are a metaphysical teacher or putting on an event, this is the place where we will serve the community and post your event. It's just us being of service and offering things to do, places to go, awareness to have. And then there will be an events pillar that will speak to the events that we're putting on here at Bodhi Tree Live. And then there will be an oracles pillar that is not launched yet. So you could go into the Bodhi Tree and get a tarot reading or a numerology reading or a animal totem reading or astrological reading. Those will be available online at bodhitree.com. Yeah. And then our final initiative is our education pillar, and we are creating online education curriculum and materials. And very pleased to announce that we have a partnership now with the University of Santa Monica, which I'm sure many of your listeners have gone there. They may have gotten their master's degree in spiritual psychology. That's a fantastic institution, which for 35 years has been teaching spirituality from a very educational and erudite way, and we're partnering with them to bring their programs online.
Well, that's great. You have really thought this through, and this has been in the making for how long?
Well, I guess since the doors closed on Melrose, which was a little over 4 years ago, I've been involved for 2 years. But Jasmine was working with other people, in that other time. So I would say it's been in the making for decades, if not millennia.
Wow.
we're just a continuation of a great tradition. You know, this is not something that we created. We're so grateful and honored to be the stewards of this great legacy.
Well, it's fantastic, and I love how you are bringing together the old and the new because of the new technology that's available. Being able to live stream these talks is fantastic for people in a city that's pretty saturated with traffic. And also being able to bring and to stream people in from other areas. So, for example, tonight at the celebration, Joan Borisenko is on the panel, and she's going to be talking from her space in Colorado, right? So she's going to be...
I think she's in New Mexico, but
New
yes,
Mexico.
Exactly. So,
fantastic.
So this is one of the great promises of technology, is that it's really going to allow us to reach around the world with the message of the Bodhi Tree and with the message of the teachers that were always such an important part of what the Bodhi Tree had to offer. So, for those who are longing for that space in Los Angeles that they could go to, understand and know and help support us in the idea that, we're reaching around the globe now. We want to share that experience that you so loved with the rest of the world, and technology will allow us to do that. And my background Fantastic. In technology and as a producer and in media was why I was, you know, in part so excited to be a part of this effort.
Absolutely. It's a perfect fit. So let's talk about tonight, the celebration, celebrating Yogananda, Paramahansa Yogananda, and the 70-year anniversary of Autobiography of a Yogi, the book that still transforms people and holds the miraculous energy that really truly forms from the words that Yogananda put on the page. And they were more than words. They carried movement, they carried miracle space because they were set in that space. Do you have any personal experience with the book Autobiography of a Yogi?
I have. I've read it, and I personally attend the Self-Realization Fellowship, mm-hmm. The Lake Shrine, in addition to going to Agape, of course. But I, one of the places my family and I love to go to is to Lake Shrine, and to have that experience. I relate very much and resonate with the teachings. And, of course, Self-Realization Fellowship was founded by Paramahansa Yogananda back in around 1920-something. And is now a worldwide organization. We are co-producing this event with another organization that follows and spreads the teachings of Yogananda, which is called Ananda Worldwide. And it was founded by Swami Kriyananda, who was a direct disciple of Paramahansa Yogananda. And so there are two parallel organizations that are both really teaching from Autobiography of a Yogi. What I remember, and it's been many years since I read the book, although I think I'm going to reread it now, is his determination and his focus on his own purpose. It was not easy for him to immigrate to the United States from India. It was not easy for him to be celibate, for him to give up everything else in his life other than his dedication to the mission and to the teaching. And I was very inspired by that personally, to have that kind of complete dedication to your life purpose, no matter what obstacles, and there were many obstacles in his own life, that one encounters. So, you know, that's a big takeaway for me from the book.
Well, that makes it's a wonderful experience to have him as Yogananda as a leader, a new thought leader. I mean, this was 70 years ago, and someone who has been responsible for creating a movement of course, Kriya Yoga, and the way that we bring joy into our lives, into the West. And joining me is another person who's going to be on the panel, Yogi Cameron. And Yogi Cameron was years and years in the fashion industry, but he learned that there is something other than just outer beauty. There's inner beauty, and he was seeking that experience of that inner beauty in a very, very deep way, and he found himself in India studying for over 10 years meditation and Ayurveda, and he now brings together the concept of inner and outer beauty together through all of his teachings and his holistic approach, and he brings it to the masses. He's been on Ellen's show and on so many different formats. Welcome to the show, Yogi Cameron. Thank you for joining me.
Thank you for having me.
It's great to speak with you. Now, you're going to be on the panel tonight. Can you tell me a little bit about your personal experience of how you were moved to change your life in your experiences in India?
Well, I worked in the fashion business from around 1986 to 98, and during that time, I worked with Madonna, did videos with her, and shot all the different campaigns like Versace and Guess Jeans, and it's a beautiful life. It was at that point. I don't know what modeling's like these days, but it was a life of travel, meeting people, speaking languages, just being all over the world. Any door is open to you. And, you know, a lot of people ask me, oh, did you burn out? Did you, you know, stop liking the business? Did you just were you sick of it? You know, and I say, I don't know about other people, but it treated me very well. I just got to a point where it's kind of like a great party. You go to a great party, you're having an amazing time. There's a time to leave that party. Mm. You know, there's a time for somebody else. You know, maybe it's 4 o'clock in the morning. For somebody else, it's 2 o'clock in the morning. But there is a certain time where a party peaks for you. And if you stay any longer at that party, it will have the reverse effect. You won't have that amazing time. You'll now have a sour taste in your mouth because you stayed too long. And fashion is about youth. It's about change, and it's a different transformation going on than what I'm into now. It's more about morphing into many different personalities and showing, you know, how multifaceted you are in your looks and your. So it's very outward driven. And in my 30s, I think I was around 32 or so, I decided I'd met Nelson Mandela at his house in South Africa, and he had come out of jail at that time, and it was 27 years he'd been in jail. And I thought, I was looking across the room, and I thought, wow, these are all the amazing people in the fashion world who everybody would really love to be like and models themselves after. And here you have, you know, a soul who's been in jail 27 years, and you know, he doesn't look battered. He doesn't look angry. He, when I met him, I spoke to him. You know, he doesn't sound bitter. He's on the contrary. He sounds like, you know, jail became his best friend for a moment. And Sachi Dananda had said in one of his books that whether you're in jail or you're in the mind's jail, but you're free in the world, it's the same thing. So you can right. Mm. So. Depends on your consciousness, depends on your awareness. And that was a turning point. And I thought, you know, I've been, this party is so amazing. I love this party, but I've got to go and go off, and there's something else calling me. So India was calling me, and I went there. And, you know, life gives you some easy things, and then it sort of hammers you on the head with some really difficult things. And so fashion was my easy point, and it was a gift. The next 20 years, I had to really work hard.
So the party ended. And
the party ended.
Were you in any way jailed in your mind within that space, or was it more of a quest that you wanted to go on? Were you trapped in your own mind in any way?
No, you know, fashion business, you really don't have to think a lot. Your ticket is handed to you. You kind of arrive. You go to the studio. You shoot. It's not a high stress job or anything. Maybe traveling is difficult at times. You get tired, but it's just not a high stress job. But like I said, when something feels so good, and remember, it's on the outside. We're talking about feelings and emotions, and we're not talking about feeling in the soul, that depth. That's sort of where I am now, and that's probably what was missing at the time, is I've conquered the outer world. Now what about this inner world? So, which is 10 times harder to conquer. You know, you have to do a lot more work to conquer that world. And that's why most people live a very outward life, because although it's still difficult, it's manageable to some degree. And the going on a spiritual journey, you know, people think sometimes, or my clients who I consult with sometimes say, you know, I'm doing my spiritual practice and I feel like life's getting harder. I thought it was supposed to get easier.
Yes.
And I say, well, no, I said that life would become more meaningful. I didn't say it was going to become easier. So from my own experience, life became very grounded, very meaningful, but at times became way more difficult than anything that I had experienced, because you're burning karma. You're going through many karmas. You may be going through many lifetime of karmas. So you feel this depth of meaningfulness, this awareness and consciousness, but at times it's very difficult, like nothing that I had ever been through the fashion business. That was like a piece of cake.
Speaking of that, did you ever have a challenge with people looking at you or wanting to be your friend for the way that your outer appearance was, or for being in the fashion industry? And did you want them to know you on a deeper level? Did you know that there was another level that you, as a soul, wanted to get to?
Mm. think as I got older, yes. When I was 19, 20, no, I was like, the more people who fancy you, the better. Yeah, it's great. You can all look at me. It's all good. And then when you get to a little bit older, you get, you know, into the 30s, I realized, that's fine, you know, because my guru said to me, you know, there's no coincidence why anything happens to anybody. So he said, you know, here you are. The soul comes into your body. You look the way you do. You go through a fashion industry, you get a lot of popularity. People want to be like you, they want to look like you, and all that different things. And then it will come to an end. And then you can go into the world again and teach them spirituality and health, because they'll look at you and say, oh, you're 50 years old, you look young, you look vibrant, what are you doing? So he says, maybe you don't have the maturity at 20 years old to go on the spiritual path. Mm-hmm. But you'll do a job that gets a lot of attention, and then later on you can use the same thing and use the outer and inner beauty, because they both have a place in the world.
So
you're not separating any of it.
And you're not denying any of it or making anything wrong.
No.
Yeah.
No, not at all. It all has a place, you know.
Did you have an experience when you read the book, The Autobiography of a Yogi book?
I got this book when I was about 20 years old, because I had a mentor at that time for about 15 years before I went to India. And this book was sitting around the house, and I keep giving it away, and it keep reappearing. And then I give it away, and then a new one would appear. And so this went on for about 15 years. I never read this book. And when I first went to India, because I also never had a calling to go to India until I left the business. And then the book reappeared, and that's when I read it, when I was in India going through some of the places Yogananda was speaking about. And it had such a great, profound experiences with it, because I was like, oh, here, this is what he's talking about. And this is, you know, Babaji's cave, and this is that area. And it was nice to go through a lot of the places that he was talking about in sort of live, you know, being there, mm-hmm. in the time. That was a wonderful experience. And then, you know, when he was, you know, I had come onto the yogic path, I was training with my guru, then I got initiated, and I took the oath of being on the path as a yogi, so I didn't, not just teaching it, but actually having to live it. Then I would read stories like Giri Bala, the saint that didn't eat, you know, from 12 years old, she never ate again. And she was about, 70 when Yogananda met her. And things like that were profound, because I thought, you know, I fast a lot. Yogis fast a lot. We don't eat at times for 30 days, 60 days. But here's somebody who didn't eat at all.
Wow.
She didn't drink, and she didn't eat. And she made a vow at 12 years old to never eat or drink again. So it showed you the power of the spirit
and
the mind.
Yes. I'm curious to know if you, and Stephen, I actually want to ask you this question as well. If you have any recommendations for people who might not have read this book, and I'm assuming people have, and I was just realizing, it is, you know, it's an 800-page book, and it has very intricate language that required me to read the sentences over and over. It looked a little bit like Shakespeare to me in the beginning. And is there a way that you suggest that people digest this book, and as well as it being available at the Bodhi Tree event tonight, how would people be able to approach their first experience with this book?
The first thing that occurs to me, of course, is that old bit of wisdom that the journey of a lifetime begins with a single step. So, you know, take a few pages, take a chapter, read some paragraphs, any way that you can begin to take in what it has to offer is valid. There are many, many wonderful quotes from it. I was just handed a book by the people from Ananda that is a collection of quotes from Autobiography of a Yogi. So
nice.
There are bits and bytes that one could do. And I personally enjoy reading words and language that I don't know, and then beginning to explore and find out what those mean. So I love that experience of learning new language. So if you can, rather than finding it daunting, rather embrace it as this is going to be a great learning experience, maybe that's the mindset that helps one to tackle an 800-page book.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yes, I mean, the language is beautiful. You can really spend time with the meaning of the language, and it's a beautiful experience.
It definitely has an energy of its own.
Yes. And Yogi Cameron, do you have any advice for people who are just introducing themselves to the book?
I would say just read it. Just read it. Don't worry about a lot of the words. You'll pretty much see that it all makes sense. You're not going to get stumped and say, if you come across a Sanskrit word you don't know, it's not going to make a huge difference to that sentence. So I would just flow, enjoy the reading. There's so much magic in it that's going to be, it's so full, this book. So it's not like one bit of it is not great and the other bit's got everything. So just read it, enjoy it, and depending on why you're reading it as well, like Stephen said, if you want to know the meaning of everything, then take your time and read it and get a dictionary and look up words. Mm-hmm. And so if your mind is more analytical, I would say do that and satisfy yourself that way. If you're just reading it for a good read to get inspired, then just read it. You can always reread it at some other point, but it's a good, inspiring book. It tells you so many stories of travel and difficulties and struggles and real human things and real superhuman things. So it's like, right? So
magical,
it's got everything.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah,
I think that's a really great point, that unlike many transformational books, this is a story. It's a very compelling story. It's really, from beginning to end, a great read in that regard.
That's amazing. Now, Stephen, why did you decide to do this particular event as a Bodhi Tree event? And tell us a little bit about how this experience came to you.
Well, it came to us, as many things do to us, if we're just open to them. So apparently someone from Ananda.org was on the Bodhi Tree mailing list, and I received an email that said, we are interested in putting on this event. Now, it fit within the greater mission of the Bodhi Tree and what kind of events we want to put on. We want to put on events that are transformational, that are inspirational, that teach. So we were open to that, and as a result, Ananda reached out to us and said, we'd love to put on this event. And, of course, I immediately felt, wow, that's really an honor, and we would love to do that. Mm-hmm. And what we've been able to do is bring to the co-production people like Yogi Cameron, like Michael Bernard Beckwith, like some of the other people who are now involved in this, and to form it into, I think, what will be a compelling live stream, a broadcast, and kind of form it into an entertaining couple of hours. So it came to us because they knew the Bodhi Tree and were interested in being part of it.
And at the Bodhi Tree, and I know you have offices and a staff and people that contribute into this vision, which is quite a wonderful vision, forward-thinking vision for the Bodhi Tree. What are your regular practices at the Bodhi Tree offices with your staff? Do you incorporate these practices into your daily routines?
We do. We all try to practice gratitude on a very regular basis, to really focus on what we are grateful for. And of course, in any business enterprise, in any initiative, there are going to be challenges. Mm-hmm. There's going to be problems, even if you want to call them that. They're growth opportunities. Mm-hmm. But we just try to look for where is the growth opportunity in this. What remind ourselves of our mission. We have the values of the Bodhi Tree, what we understand the values to be of love and compassion and understanding and service, all up on a board there. When we have our team meeting, we always start the team meeting with a quote, and that is circled around to the various staff members, and they get the opportunity to pick a quote that is meaningful for them and to begin the meeting with that. We also unlike maybe some businesses, but I think many transformational businesses do this, I learned this at Agape, when something is going on in any of our team members' lives, we stop in our team meeting and we acknowledge that, and we send love and energy and prayer, literally, for someone's mother or father or brother or friend who is going through a trying time or maybe has transitioned. So we acknowledge those things as a family, as a community. This is definitely a team support, what we're doing here with the Bodhi Tree. We all work together. It's not about any one person. It's really about what we can do together.
I'm excited about what you're creating, and you're just in the very beginning stages in a public way. You've been at this for a while, but it's exciting what's unfolding and what's possible and how you're using technology to bring in even more people and reach even more people with the messages that the spiritual community has circulated for a while. So the panel, let's talk about the panel tonight, and let's talk about the evening. Tell us a little bit about what people can expect this evening if they're watching the live stream. And again, they can go to Bodhi Tree, B-O-D-H-I, tree.com, and they can participate. You can sign up for the live stream there. The event, the physical event at the studio is sold out, correct?
Correct. Okay. We're at capacity for that event. So let's start with who's going to be on the panel. In addition to Yogi Cameron, we have Philip Goldberg, the great author. We have Elizabeth Rahm. We have Michael Bernard Beckwith. We have video taped specifically for this event from the leaders of Ananda Worldwide, Nayaswamis Jyotish and Devi Novak. We have the Ananda Choir. We have live music that will be presented in the evening. We have you. Lisa Garr will be hosting a panel discussion with these various thought leaders and teachers.
We are going
to be presenting a film, which is a short documentary film called The Spark, which is speaks about the spiritual revolution that this book has really ignited and sparked, and kind of speaks to the influence of the book in popular culture. So it will be a blending of streamed content and live content from the Bodhi Tree. It starts at 7 p.m. Pacific time and will run for a couple of hours. And I'm sure there'll be much to learn and experience.
Yeah, it's near and dear to my heart because I have interviewed Swami Kriyananda many times here in this very studio in Los Angeles at KPFK. And I remember him, Swami Kriyananda, coming in with his many disciples. They would come in blue, and they would sit around the floor while I was having this joyous, incredible conversation with Swami Kriyananda, who is so loving and so beautiful as a spirit and as a heart and a soul. And I learned all about Ananda.
One thing I should make clear, Lisa, is that to register for the live stream event, go to bodhitree.com/Yogananda, which is Y-O-G-A-N-A-N-D-A, if you don't know how to spell it. So bodhitree.com/Yogananda. And there you'll register to the live stream. It'll also be on Facebook Live on the Bodhi Tree Facebook page. And it'll also be on Periscope. So if you're a young millennial who uses Periscope, just check out Celebrate Yogananda on Periscope, and it'll be there as well.
Oh, so it's going to be live on Periscope. Fantastic. And also...
Yep.
On the live stream through the Bodhi Tree website and Facebook Live. Fantastic. Well,
I'll also mention for all of your listeners that you can, through this process, receive a free audiobook or ebook of Autobiography of a Yogi. So when you register, you will see a button on that landing page that says click here to receive your free copy of either the ebook or the audiobook, which is read by Swami Kriyananda of this book.
Oh, wonderful, wonderful.
Yeah,
my
that's our
goodness.
Gift to everyone who will participate with us.
Oh, my goodness. What a wonderful gift. Now, is the event, is the live stream a cost?
No, it's free.
Wow.
I mean, this is just a gift to everyone from Ananda and with Bodhi Tree's help.
That is amazing as well. I was thinking since it was on Facebook Live and Periscope, it would be free. So that is fantastic. Well, thank you for doing that. Yes. So the other panelist, Philip Goldberg, who I've also interviewed on the Aware Show is author of the best-selling book American Veda, blogs for the Huffington Post. He was well-versed in Yogananda's influence in bringing meditation to the West, and he's currently working on a book.
Did we mention Joan Borisenko?
Yes.
She's also,
Joan, yeah. Yes. And she's going to tell a personal story of how reading, just by having, she had an awakening experience, a crack in consciousness through reading Autobiography of a Yogi, which she will explain in detail, and it led to her creating, as being a pioneer in integrative medicine and world-renowned expert in mind-body connection. She's a New York Times bestselling author, PBS special. She's amazing as well. Our very own Yogi Cameron is with me on the air here today, and he's going to be on the panel as well. Michael Beckwith, who is also a wonderful, of course, he's the founder of Agape International Spiritual Center, also has a show here on KPFK, and he's so prolific. He's just an incredible communicator of the divine. He will be joining the panel. And we also mentioned Narayan Romano, which he's the spiritual director of Ananda LA, and Elizabeth Rome, and she is best known for her role as the assistant DA in the hit TV series Law and Order, and she is also going to be joining the panel. Can you tell us, if you know, Stephen, Elizabeth's connection with the Paramahansa Yogananda work?
Yes, I do know. She was hired I'm conveying this accurately. She was hired as an actress to play the part of a reporter who goes to visit the Ananda community, their intentional community in Nevada City, California. And it's a challenging assignment for her. And so the movie is a dramatic film, not a documentary, that followed her doing that as a reporter and discovering the community, loving the community. Well, the same thing happened to Elizabeth in person, that experience of making that film just really lit her up in terms of the teachings of Paramahansa Yogananda, and she has become an active member of the community. She is also in the film The Spark, the documentary film, and talks about what she learned from that.
Wow, that's wonderful. So she's kind of living this work as well.
Yes.
Yeah, that's fantastic. I love the work of the Ananda community. Can you tell us, I think we've mentioned it a few times, but what is an intentional community? Maybe Yogi Cameron or whoever.
Yeah, why don't you speak to that?
Yeah. What is Ananda? What is intentional community? What is the point of it? What is the concept behind it?
It's everybody who follows the same philosophy. So yogic path, for example, we follow different paths of bhakti, is the path of devotion, the path of service is one, path of being a sannyasi, when you go and you devote your life completely like the Buddhists do or some of the Ananda Swamis do. It's following a path that everybody kind of believes in, and it's one path. Because the reason you build a community like that is usually if you have a guru who leads, and what it is for spiritual growth. So spiritual growth can happen at any different level, but you do need material to read, you need practices to do, you need somebody to lead you. So the community is basically set up so it nurtures all those things that you need, and then you obviously believe in that one path. And all of these spiritual paths lead to the same place. So, but because in the Ayurvedic tradition we learn that everybody's special, everybody's individual, we have an individual mind. So we need different spiritual practices particular to our mind so we can thrive on that path. So like I said, when we were talking about the book, for example, if you're analytical mind, then you need Jnana Yoga. Jnana Yoga is very much about the intellect because your mind just works that way. So you feed the mind what it wants because it will thrive. So Ananda is set up as a community where Yogananda was the the guru and Yogananda's teachings. And yes, it's the path of Kriya, which is one of the yogic paths. But it also has some part of Tantra within that path as well. And it has some other practices that they do, which is physical. It's not like yoga asana, but it's some kind of physical practice. So also on that line, you have physical practices, you have mental practices, and then you have spiritual practices. So, but the community itself is really there for you to thrive within, because if you follow Kriya or you follow Jnana or you follow Bhakti or whatever it is, it's really about where you fit into that path. But you don't change that path. The path is already set up for you. The teachings are already set up for you. So when Paramahansa Yogananda set up SRF, yeah, and Ananda came from that, mm-hmm, what he really did was say, here's a path that you have all the things that you need, all the tools that you need. You don't need to make anything up in your mind. All you need to do is learn how to use these tools. So that's the reason of these communities.
And then Swami Kriyananda, who was the direct disciple of Yogananda, founded Ananda internationally, or exist internationally?
It does. It's a worldwide organization. In fact, I believe the name is Ananda Worldwide. I think they're in 120 countries. Mm-hmm. There's a large contingency in India, of course.
I see, of course. And now, Yogi Cameron, are you a part of Ananda LA?
No, I'm a yogi. I have a guru in India. My wife and I, Yogi Nijema, and I live part of the time in a forest in India. And we are devotees of a temple, Mugambika, there. So we are Devi temple worshippers. So Devi is the female aspect of God. So God is universal. The mind cannot fathom God. So what the Vedas brought some 10,000 years ago was that we are male and we are female, as God is male and female, as energy is male and female. So at different times we worship God and the divine in many different forms. So we are at this point, it said, in Kali Yuga. Yuga is the age, and Kali is one of the most densest of ages, and we need to worship more the female aspect of divinity. That's why we have we had the Women's Lib come up, and the women's power is now becoming very dominant, is because in these times we need that. And Yogananda spoke about it as well, and many of the gurus speak about it in India. That it is not just the time of the woman, it's the time of female energy, which is also an aspect of a male body, is male and female. So we worship that. So we're not a part of any. But like Stephen said, he goes to SRF. I have many friends in SRF. I have friends in Ananda. So the doors are kind of open. Whatever practitioner you are, you can practice at Ananda or SRF.
Aren't we lucky to have these great spiritual resources in Los Angeles? It's quite extraordinary, and we have for many, many years. I don't know when the Self-Realization Fellowship was founded. 40 years ago?
Longer, 1920-something. When Yogananda first came. I don't know. Lake Shrine, mm-hmm, I think, was later, but the organization itself was when Yogananda first came to America in the 1920s.
I was thinking of the one in the Palisades, and there's the other one is in Los Angeles. And so fascinating. I used to speak with Swami Kriyananda about his original experiences in Los Angeles specifically, and why he came here. And his stories are so great. He was a great storyteller about how he was carrying out the work of Yogananda here in Los Angeles. Why specifically L.A., though? Do you remember? It's open-ended question. Sorry, Yogi Cameron. I'm sorry. I've got a habit of doing that, asking these questions, throwing them out there.
I don't know the answer to that either, but it's interesting that Southern California has such an extraordinary history. Krishnamurti, of course, and many others that you know have been drawn here and sort of blossomed here.
California.
I was going to say, I think you know why is Yogi Cameron here, right, of all places? So you know, why am I here? Why are so many are drawn here? There's definitely a powerful energy that I think reaches across around the globe that emanates here.
The history here, though, is what's so fascinating. If you're looking for traditional history that is specific to Los Angeles, you will find it within the history and the story of the community around Paramahansa Yogananda and the Ananda community and so forth. It's really quite an incredible story. If you look at it, it mimics the autobiography. It's a story of the unfoldment, as he said, the point of the book is to controlling the mind through the life force is the most effective and scientific approach to the infinite. This was a quote by Yogananda, and that's about Kriya Yoga. And it's about how to lift the mind to joy. And if Yogi Cameron, if you could speak to that a little bit about what Kriya Yoga is, that would be, oh, wonderful.
Mm-hmm. So Kriya Yoga is one of the yogic paths, and it's all about the different practices. So Kriya means cleansing. Many of the Sanskrit words have different meanings, but one of the meanings of Kriya is cleansing. So Babaji is the guru of Kriya Yoga. So Babaji is an entity. He's coming into the body. He's said to be about 800 years old. And that's the real guru of all Kriya Yogis. So they are all gurus, but they all have the guru, which is Babaji. It's really, we're speaking about avatar. Like Christ was an avatar, Buddha was an avatar, Babaji is an avatar. And they have specific practices that they do. The reason all the different paths are different is it's the practices within them which are different. The approach of them are different. So when you speak about Tantra, it has different approaches within it. So Kriya has all these different types of cleansings that you do. Some of them are physical. Some of them come from the Ayurvedic tradition where you're putting strings up the nose and putting cloth inside the stomach and bringing it back up. So everything is about cleansing, purifying, and strengthening. Because Yogananda was always talking about meditation and the monkey mind and how the mind is it needs somebody to control it. Otherwise, somebody else is going to control it, which is what we kind of see in what's happening in the world. Mm-hmm. So he stressed, and as all gurus pretty much stress, and this is how all yogic paths are really the same, is you've got to control your physical body first. And when he speaks about the life force, he's speaking about prana, the breath. So prana is not the breath itself, but it's what makes the breath. It's what gives the force to the breath. So once you control the body, then you control the breath. Once you control the breath, then you control the senses. And once you control the senses, then the mind is ready for getting controlled. So it's not emptying the mind ever, because the mind is never empty. It has thousands of years of memory. So you can't do that, but you can get it to focus on one thing, and then from there you can fall into meditation naturally. So meditation is the goal, but meditation isn't the practice. So all these other things are the practice, which naturally bring you to fall into meditation.
That's beautifully said. No, that is beautifully said, to fall into meditation. Well, if people would like to experience this on their own, you can go to bodhitree.com/Yogananda. And it's not, Stephen, it's not the Bodhi Tree, right? It's just bodhitree.com.
It's just bodhitree.com,
okay,
correct.
bodhitree.com/Yogananda. Or you could watch the event tonight on Facebook Live or Periscope. This is the It's going to be such an inspirational event as well to listen to people tell stories about their experiences either with Yogananda or with the autobiography of a yogi book. So please join us tonight. Thank you so much. I really appreciate Stephen Powers for joining me today and Yogi Cameron. It's been a true joy to speak with you, and congratulations on the reopening of the Bodhi Tree. I'm very excited. Thank you so much, and we look forward to supporting you in any way in the future. Thank you.
Thank you. We are so grateful for your participation.
Absolutely. See you tonight. All right.
Thank you.
And until next time, bye-bye. Until next time, I invite you all to stay aware.